Unpolished Little Gems, Episode 1, Hope. First up, a piece about the frustrations and anxieties of online dating. Online was written by Tasmin Pinder and performed by Alicia Brockenbrow.
Online messages me a lot. Tells me he likes my hair and how full my lips are. He tells me I give him certain ideas. We meet up, we see a bad film, we have Chinese food and sex. We have a lot of sex. Online tells me he's looking for a relationship. He's in the market. He's looking for the one. She might be the last one. He hopes she's the last one. He tells me he cares about me. He wouldn't want to hurt me. But you must understand, there's something about the way we got into this that means I'd hold back from you. I'd be too anxious, he says. I wouldn't be able to give you everything. I'd feel guilty. I wouldn't ever want to hurt you. Online knows instantly I'm not the one. It takes one night of kissing me, of holding me against him, and then we have sex. Again. And again. And again. Each time compounds his belief that I'm most definitely not right for him. Because he's anxious of the way we got into things, the stoppy-starty nature of things. The fact I wasn't sure at the beginning. These are all insurmountable problems, he says. And at this stage, he wouldn't want to get into anything without being 100% sure. Nevertheless, it is worth checking by having sex just once more. To make certain. Online is very sensitive to women's feelings. He can make me come in under a minute and a half. And each time he calls me up, each time he invites me over, he's all the more convinced that his perfect relationship is definitely not with me. We are definitely not going out. And it definitely wouldn't work if I were to be his girlfriend. My friends ask me why it wouldn't work, and I say, online has very compelling reasons. He's sure I'm not the one. It's something to do with the way we got into things. Only, I can't phrase it the way online does, and it all sounds a little nebulous, the way I put things. I can't remember the exact reasons, I say, but he has his reasons, and they are compelling. And my friends say, I talk to him about his body and the way he touches me and how much he excites me. Online thinks he's a genius in bed because I have such a great time. And it's not just me who's having a good time. He told me he's in the market for a new relationship. He's trying women out, although I don't know who and I don't know when. He is a complete whore by his own account. And now he's looking for the one. Now, I don't fully understand what he's looking for. It's not for me to understand. But it must be a complex matrix involving a list of complicated and specific criteria. I think one of the criteria for the one must have to do with how he gets into the relationship initially. If it's the one, he'll know right away. None of this Ross and Rachel, will they, won't they malarkey. Just because it definitely won't work with us, and he is so sure that he wouldn't want to waste my time trying, online would still like us to be friends. Because he cares about me and he's sensitive to women. And if we want to, we can have sex for now. And it doesn't have to be anything. In fact, we should be very, very clear that it isn't anything. Sex. Sex. We can still just do that until he meets the woman he's destined to be with. I tell online all of my fantasies, all except one, the one that's too personal. I don't tell him because it's mundane and because it challenges his core assumption about the casual nature of our relationship. And I shouldn't like to disabuse him of his certainty. He suffers from anxiety. He's one of those men who cares too much about hurting women. That's why he sleeps with so many of them, to avoid a significant attachment. So I decide not to tell online how my heart beats faster when we're alone, and I imagine we've just put the kids to bed. And I don't tell him that I often fantasize about making him coffee before he goes to work in the morning, about washing his clothes and leaving them in little piles in front of his bedroom door ready to iron the next day. And I certainly don't tell him that I fervently wish he would stop caring about the way we got into things and that I hope something happens when he's looking at me one night. And there's a sudden spark, a compelling feeling which makes him a lot less certain that I'm not right for him. Suddenly he's not anxious. He just goes with it. He doesn't hold back. And I look at him and I say, I love you. And he gently kisses me on top of the head. He wants to give me everything. He puts his arms around me. He holds me close. And he tells me, I love you too.
Sarah is always looking on the bright side. Perhaps she should be looking at what's in front of her. The Bathroom Mirror stars Sarah Wright as Sarah and was written and produced by Tracy Hayward.
Have you ever been looking at something and suddenly, like a lens on a camera, something just shifts and you see it completely differently to how you did before? It can happen with people and places and all sorts of things. The problem is, sometimes you didn't want the shift to happen. You didn't want to see things any differently than what you did before. You didn't ask for it. It doesn't matter, though. It comes all the same. I was lying in bed with Martin after we, well, you know, and I was staying over. Well, I hoped I was. He hadn't said I wasn't, and normally he falls asleep quite quickly after, and I, well, stay. Anyway, we were laid in bed together, just after, and I was naked under his quilt, lying on my side, propped up my elbow, coquettishly half covering my cleavage with Martin's quilt, like a Hollywood starlet, or so I hoped. And he lay half upright, in an old grey t-shirt, watching snooker on the television, and picking his beard and drinking Carling. He hadn't offered me a drink, you see, and I was wondering how I could get one without asking. Obviously, I knew you couldn't just outright ask for a drink at someone else's house without being asked first. So I thought perhaps I could develop a sudden cough, which would lead him to ask me if I wanted a drink. Or I could ask him if he was enjoying his drink in the hope he would ask me if I was enjoying my drink, and then he would realise I didn't have a drink, and then he would offer me one. I couldn't just get up and get it myself. I might look like I had, well, you know, made myself at home. If I had asked for wine outright, and he didn't have any, he might feel like a bad host. And if I asked for wine rather than Carling, he might think that I thought that there was something wrong with Carling. Still, I did want to get rid of the taste of fags and beer off my breath, though. So, I decided to go to the bathroom to rinse my mouth out with toothpaste and water. I wondered what the best way was to get out of bed in a sexy way. I mean, what do you say?
I'm going to the loo? No. Lavatory?
No. Toilet? No. Over there? No. None of them worked. How could I explain I was leaving without saying where I was actually going? So, I swung my legs out of the bed and said what I hoped was in a sultry voice, I'll be back. I let out a little chuckle and smiled at the incongruous Terminator reference and turned to see if Martin had caught it too, but he was still staring at the snooker on the television. I kept my clothes off, so I didn't ruin the romantic mood. I hobbled across his cold bedroom into the bathroom. I stood at the sink and stared at my reflection in the mirror. The bathroom mirror had obviously not been cleaned in weeks and was littered with smears of toothpaste splashes and whatever else. The used-up toilet rolls were stacked high on the shelf. The taps had a build-up of limescale on them and there were these long curly hairs on the soap that I told myself were the same length as the hair in his head. He hadn't even brushed the toilet brush around the fecal-smattered toilet bowl. And it struck me, suddenly, without any desire to see it. I would move heaven and earth for him. I had spent most of the afternoon prepping and buffing and waxing and plucking, all to be perfect for him. And he couldn't even spend 10 minutes giving the bathroom a quick once-over before I had arrived. I knew it. I knew that he didn't care for me in the same way that I cared for him. And I also knew, in that moment, that if I wanted to begin the path to a proper, loving relationship, I would have to step off this path I was on now with him and walk away and close the door without knowing what lay ahead for me on the other side. I stared back at my reflection through the smeared mirror with the dots and the specks and the smudges, and I couldn't help but smile back at myself, at the irony that his lack of care and attention was obscuring my true reflection of myself. But I also knew, with equal clarity, that I didn't have the bravery, or whatever you call it, to just walk away from him. I wondered maybe if I even did deserve more, if I would find more, and maybe this, him, was enough. I stared back at my reflection in the mirror and considered my options, and after a while I thought, once you get used to it, you stop noticing the marks in the mirror were even there. And so, I washed my hands and rinsed my mouth out and returned to the bedroom to watch the snooker with Martin.